Hello, it's Debbie with the Herald, Decatur Herald Review from their website, heraldreview.com. It is Wednesday, September 30th, 2015. Starting with local news. LSA students experiment with, police say teen confesses to shooting. Decatur. The 16-year-old male who was shot in the chest Saturday evening on the city's east side identified his shooter as Demarius Franklin. Also known to him by his street name, D-Man. When police followed up on statements by the victim and at least one witness, Franklin, 17, confessed to the shooting, according to a court document. After Franklin was taken into police custody that night, he admitted to intentionally shooting the victim in the chest, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Amber Patient. Franklin, who was arrested at 12:05 a.m. Sunday, is being held on a $1 million bond at the juvenile detention facility. The victim is expected to recover. The incident occurred between 6 and 6:30 p.m. Saturday in the 1400 block of East Condit Street. The victim was found lying on the ground with a bullet wound in his chest area. When emergency responders arrived on the scene, the victim said D-Man shot him, Patient wrote in her statement. The victim, who was diagnosed with life-threatening injuries, was transported to Decatur Memorial Hospital, then transported to a St. Louis facility. His condition has been upgraded to critical but stable. He's scheduled to be transferred from the intensive care unit of St. Louis Children's Hospital today. Witnesses who were at the shooting scene were interviewed at the police headquarters. A witness positively identified Demarius Franklin, also known as D-Man, as the person who shot the victim, the police affidavit said. Franklin is expected to be arraigned on charges of attempted first-degree murder and aggravated battery with a firearm this week in Macon County Circuit Clerk. Franklin was automatically transferred to adult court as a result of the latter charge. Franklin, who was serving a 12-month probation term as a result of a juvenile adjudication for a theft charge February 24th in Sangamon County, was living with his mother in Decatur as his last known address, said a court document. He last attended MacArthur High School and was in the 11th grade, the document said. End of that article. Stephen Decatur students shine light on black artists, says the headline. The caption on a picture here, student Elisa Moore shares her studies on artist William Henry Johnson during Harlem Renaissance presentations in African-American art history class at Stephen Decatur Middle School. When Stephen Decatur Middle School art teacher Mary Lanker was in college, she took a course in African-American art. Most of the art history she studied in college was centered on the masters, what Lanker laughingly called dead white guys, such as Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci. This class, in contrast, fascinated her because it featured artists and styles she had rarely encountered. When the districts gave teachers a chance to create a course in an area of their own choosing, she proposed a class based on that college class, and her principal gave her the okay. The kids were excited because I told them it was based on a college class, Lanker said. Lanker put names in a basket, and kids drew one out for their project. If they wanted to, they could trade. We didn't know anything about him, says Shantez Bertley, whose topic was James A. Porter. We learned a lot by doing this. It was a different type of art. That type of art wasn't well known, and we get to learn about a different type of art. Students took over the role of teacher, said Elisa Moore, and gave presentations on their artists to the class. We had to research it on our own and figure it out on our own, she said. African-American art doesn't have a lot of light shined on it, so she made a particular class for African-American art. The students concentrated their research on artists connected to the Harlem Renaissance, a time in the 1920s and 30s when Harlem, New York, became a cultural center where black authors, poets, artists, photographers, philosophers, musicians congregated to celebrate their talents and heritage. This was the first time black artists could tap into their heritage, Lanker told students Tuesday. They could accept and use their ethnic identity in their art. End of the article written by Valerie Wells from the Herald and Review staff. Continuing with sad news, Scoville Zoo cheetah Renaco dies. They had a picture here in the paper of from 2003 of the animal looking very healthy. This is by Allison Petty, also of the Herald and Review. Decatur, after more than a decade delighting visitors to Scoville Zoo, one of its two cheetah brothers died Monday. Renoco suffered difficulty eating over the past 2 weeks, zoo director Ken Fry said Tuesday. He grew weaker, had trouble walking, and began to lose control of bodily functions. Blood work indicated he was in kidney failure. Zoo staff took Renoco to the University of Illinois, where he was euthanized and died shortly before 1 p.m. on Monday. Fry said Renoco's brother, Jafari, appears to be doing fine, both in health and spirit. Sometimes when they are looking for brothers or kids or whatever, they make these chirping sounds. He's not doing any of that, Fry said. Right now, he's just acting like a big cat, laying around and sleeping. Renoco and Jafari have been among the zoo's most iconic attractions since their arrival in Decatur in July 2003 when they were 15 months old. At 13 and a half years old, the two had already outlived the median life expectancy for cheetahs in captivity, which is 11.3 years, according to the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. Necropsy results later this week could reveal more information, but renal failure is a common health issue for cheetahs in captivity, Fry said. Hundreds of people, including zoo staff, donors, and Millikan University students, were able to visit the big cats in their exhibit, hear them purr and scratch their ears through a change in regulation, though a change in regulation prevented that access in recent years. The brothers were hand-raised at the DeWilt Cheetah and Wildlife Center in South Africa, where the zoo's assistant director, Dave Webster, spent a week learning how to care for them. Their arrival in the city came after years of coordinated effort between the zoo, Decatur Parks Foundation, and local businessmen and men. Their arrival in the city came after years of coordinated effort between the zoo, Decatur Parks Foundation, and local businessman and philanthropist Howard Buffett. Fry said zoo officials won't seek another cheetah until Jafari dies, which could be years away. The AZA maintains a species survival program for cheetahs, so the zoo would likely look to that resource when it's time to seek new animals. We have talked to them in the past, and they said they felt confident they could get us cheetahs whenever that time came, Fry said. The last day of the zoo's regular fall hours is October 12th. End of article. Next article, partnership targets skills gap with jobs database. This is Decatur, written by Chris Lusvardi for the Herald and Review. Richland Community College launched a Tool Tuesday with hopes of helping job seekers more efficiently navigate through the training process. The AMSI Career Coach website contains a database of career-building tools and job openings indicator and surrounding areas for Richland students and community members to explore. It includes information about what training is needed to qualify for specific jobs, Richland President Gail Saunders said. They'll know when they need to acquire additional education, Saunders said. It's useful to narrow down fields of interest and keep them on track. The website is part of an attempt to address the skills gap that is attributed to the Decatur's area unemployment rate, which continues to be above the statewide average of 5.6%. The Decatur area rate was 6.8% in August as efforts continue to match workers with the correct skill sets for open jobs. Richland partnered with the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County along with the City of Decatur to develop the website. The Richland Foundation contributed funding for the program, Saunders said. Having a qualified, skilled workforce is part of what EDC President Ryan McCrady uses when marketing the community to interested businesses. We're able to say we already have it in place, McCrady said. It's another great asset we can use to market. Being able to research and know about what it takes to work in a particular area of interest will help job seekers find the well-paying positions they seek, said Patrick Hoban, the city's economic development officer. This is an opportunity that will show you where the real jobs are, Hoban says. Saunders said the jobs in highest demand include nursing, truck driving, welding, and engineering with skills in the STEM fields. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The online database can be used by anyone ranging from high school students to displaced workers, Saunders said. The website includes research tools and a resume builder to help prepare job seekers, said Gianna Baker, Richland's director of Richland Director of Institutional Effectiveness Planning. She said the program's users can find out what degrees and certificates Richland offers and enter their military background, if applicable, to link with jobs that are available. Baker said the website provides a background assessment to give anyone interested a better understanding of what jobs might match their interests. She said those with more questions can seek information and guidance from Richland's Career Center staff. End of the article. Schools rally for WSOY Community Food Drive. The picture here with the caption, it's like some people having a lot of fun. Our Lady of Lourdes teacher Jenny Brummer takes a pie to the face from an eighth grader Abby Robinson as part of the school's fundraiser for WSOY Community Food Drive. Now, the teacher is decked out, except for her face, totally in plastic wrap here, so that she doesn't get her clothes all goofed up. Decatur. Valerie Wells, again, the staff writer. Carly Haynes came to the LSA High School on Monday out of uniform, but she didn't get in trouble. She also brought a sack full of donations for the WSOY Community Food Drive. Students who bring a minimum of 5 cans of food get a free dress code day. It's a great motivator, Carly said. The elementary students are competing by classroom. In the high school, students are grouped by prides, which is what they call their small groups, for Bible study. At the end of the week, the winners will get a prize, which for now is a carefully guarded secret, Assistant Principal Allison Nolan said. Schools across the community participate in the annual food drive and have traditionally provided significantly large donations. The 14th annual event is set for October 9th at the Airport Plaza Kroger with a goal of £1 million of food and cash. The record mark hit last year. All right, let's read that again. The 14th annual event is set for October 9th at the Airport Plaza Kroger with a goal of £1.04 million of food and cash, the record mark hit last year. Decatur's Catholic Charities and the Salvation Army received the donations, and last year enough was collected that Northeast Community Food and the Good Samaritan Inn each received $40,000. The Judy Mason Thanksgiving Basket Project received $25,000, and other local organizations received smaller donations. To donate, visit Kroger, 1818 Airport Plaza, between 6 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. October 9th, or drop off donations of non-perishable food items at a participating school or business. Sponsors include Archer Daniels Midland Company, Kroger, Dale's South Lake Pharmacy, Decatur Back and Neck Center, First Christian Church, Herald and Review, Jones and Thomas Incorporated /JTNet, Skeff Distributing, Soy Capital Bank and Trust, Tickets and Trips, United Way of Decatur, and Mid-Illinois, WAND-TV, and Wood Printing Services. Decatur's public schools are participating as usual and have already begun collecting donations. The kids are going into the neighborhood to drop off flyers, said Debbie McKierney, secretary at Parsons School. The sixth grade is going to Kroger on collection day to help unload vehicles. Signs are already up asking for donations to be dropped off, and classrooms are competing against each other for biggest donation. Sponsors offer prizes for the school with the biggest donation. St. Patrick's School took top honors for schools last year with a jaw-dropping £166,021 contribution. Our Lady of Lourdes donated £110,134 and has already begun collecting for this year's drive. Lourdes' first week of competition ended with an assembly on September 25th, during which willing teachers took a cream pie in the face, thanks to 4,442 items already collected. A post on the school's Facebook page urged families to donate without feelings of guilt if that meant the teacher would get a pie in the face, as the teachers had volunteered for it with good humor. Students placed donations in stacks devoted to specific teachers, and the new staff members had the biggest stacks, Principal Chris Upmore said. Donations came in so well that all the volunteer teachers were honored with a pie. For each teacher to get a pie in the face, they had to have had at least 250 cans of food, he said. In our 8th grade enrichment program, one of the things we're working on is for the kids to be responsible for the food drive this year. Students formed teams for marketing, accounting, and public speaking, and organized the whole thing, he said. Giving is more meaningful for the students if they run the drive than if the adults simply tell them what to do, he said. The enticement period, said 8th grade Veronica Hine, is when they have a chance to do community service projects, and the food drive is perfect for that. One change this year is that competition among Lourdes students is gone. We really wanted to make it a community project, Veronica says. Instead of it being first grade against second grade, for example, we wanted to donate as a community and work together. End of the article. Next, witness ID suspected shooting trial. This is by Huey Freeman, a staff writer for the Herald and Review. Decatur, Rakeem C. Hill, a 21-year-old Decatur man who is serving a 2-year prison term for an unrelated prior weapons charge, is on trial for firing multiple shots at a West Side house occupied by a woman. In her opening statement Tuesday, Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Pam Domash said the defendant is charged with aggravated discharge of a firearm and possession of weapons by a felon for shooting at the residence March 11th. Domash told the jurors that a witness who was sitting in a car in the scene got a good look at one of the individuals who ran with a distinct limp after seeing two males standing near the house and hearing gunfire. Assistant Public Defender Andrew Wessler said that witness and another prosecution witness would prove to be unreliable. He said the witness who was sitting in her car made a facial identification of someone she never saw before in her life. The other witnesses repeatedly changed her story, Wessler said. The first witness was a woman who lived almost directly across the street from the bullet-riddled house. She testified that after working at a restaurant and picking up her 3 children from her mother's house, she parked in front of her house. I sat there and listened to music and played with my phone a little bit, the woman testified. Suddenly she heard gunshots. It was like boom, boom, boom. Then it stopped. She called 911. As she reclined in the driver's seat for cover, she saw through her side view mirror one man standing in front of the house across the street, just south of hers, and another man on the side of the house near the alley. Both men were well lit by streetlights. She said she had a clear view of one of the men, the one who ran with the limp. He was looking around, then took off. I got a good look at his face. She identified Hale and Cord as the man she saw running from the scene. Under cross-examination, Wessler challenged her statement that the shots were fired right by her car. It is right by my car, the woman responded. Decatur Patrol Officer Megan Welch testified that she found about 13 bullet holes in the north and east sides of the house, as well as bullet fragments inside, on the floor, and inside the wall. On March 30th, Hill, also known as Rakeem, pleaded guilty to possession of weapons by a felon in a 2013 case. He was out on bond in that case at the time of the March 11th incident. End of that article. Next article. Barbershop owner, role model, Jacob Robinson, dies at 91. This is by Teresa Churchill, a senior writer for the Herald and Review, Decatur. The Reverend T.J. Jackson said he got sound advice growing up, whether he was in church or sitting in the barber's chair. That's because the source was one and the same, Jacob Jake Robinson, his Sunday school teacher at Antioch Missionary Baptist Church, and the man who cut his hair. You could always go to him for a good straight answer, said Jackson, who is pastor of Bright Morning Star Missionary Baptist Church. When I said I hadn't decided where to go to college, he told me a mind not made up is saying no. Robinson, who influenced countless lives, is a man of God and is one of Decatur's first and longest-serving black entrepreneurs, died of heart failure at 3 a.m. last Wednesday in Symphony of Decatur. He was 91. Born in Mississippi, Robinson moved to Illinois with his family as a teenager, and as a teenager worked in a barbershop in Murfreesboro before serving in the Army during World War II. Afterward, he settled in Decatur and cut hair on the side while doing factory work until he built his own barbershop in 1962 on Sheridan Street. He expanded his business and moved it to Cantrell Street in the mid-1980s and continued to cut hair there until last year. Deborah Ford, a fellow member of Antioch Church who was Robinson's neighbor when he lived in the 800 block of South Webster Street, admired him for keeping his business in the neighborhood even after he and his family became one of the first black families to move into South Shores in 1969. He never forgot his roots and helped other businesses get started, Ford said. He was active in church, a family man, and loved his family, a good father who stressed education and prepared his children for future spirituality and for the future spiritually and financially. Mr. Robinson wore many hats, but he wore them all well. The Reverend Thomas Walker, a longtime customer who started Walker Funeral Service in Chapel in 1976, said Robinson was a forward thinker who opened the door for other blacks to go into business for themselves. He was one of the first barbershops to hire a female stylist, said Walker, who was also pastor of the Main Street Church of the Living God. He also showed us the best way to do business was to be honest and fair. Treasurer at his church for more than 24 years, Robinson served previously as treasurer of the Black Business Association of Decatur and received a longevity award in 1990 at the Downstate Illinois Minority Enterprise System Minority Business Export Expo. At the Downstate Illinois Minority Enterprise System Minority Business Expo. Macon County Board Member Bill Oliver has satisfying memories of how he and Robinson helped found Decatur's Emanon Club, which has given more than $150,000 college scholarships since 1973. But humor was also part of their relationship, and a standing joke was for the customer to ask how the barber could keep charging the same amount of money in Oliver's case for cutting an ever-diminishing amount of hair. He said, he was charging me for looking for hair to cut, Oliver said. He was an asset to the community, and I'm going to miss him. End of the article. Continuing with state news, state and regional, Ronner closing museum's shooting range amid budget standoff. Chicago. Governor Bruce Rauner is set to close state museums and a sports shooting complex because of Illinois' budget crisis, even though most staff will still report to work, and the chairman of the museum's board said the savings will amount to peanuts. The Republican governor targeted the 138-year-old museum in Springfield, its four satellite locations, and the World Shooting and Recreational Complex in the southern Illinois community of Sparta for closure effective today, September 30th. He says as part of his efforts to manage state finances, as Illinois enters its fourth month without a budget and a deal with Democrats who control the legislature remains elusive. Rauner's office initially sent layoff notices to more than 100 workers at the sites earlier this year. He said closing the museums and recreational complex would save Illinois about $6.3 million. But labor unions sued, arguing the move violated their contracts with the state. Rauner agreed to postpone the layoffs for union workers pending a court ruling, but said he would go ahead with the closings. The decision had left supporters of the facility scratching their heads. They note workers will be collecting paychecks and the facility still will have to be maintained. But the public, including school groups that frequent the museums, will be shut out. Query Suggs, G-U-E-R-R-Y, Suggs, chairman of the State Museum Board of Directors, said the move doesn't make much sense. Researchers and scientists will continue their work, but it's unclear what staff, such as tour guides and security officers, will do, Suggs said. Maybe somebody will get a good card game going, he said. Rauner spokeswoman Lindsay Walter said, in addition to scientific research, curators will maintain collections and educators will plan future programming. Other employees will be put in temporary roles. Workers at the Sparta complex will prepare the site for winter, then be reassigned to other sites. Closing the Illinois State Museum and Sparta shooting complex will save Illinois taxpayers millions of dollars, Walter said in an emailed statement. Suggs estimated the savings from laying off a small number of non-union museum employees would be less than $400,000 annually. Minuscule compared with the state's multi-billion-dollar deficit of the tax revenue generated by tourists, he said. Okay, I'm going to reread that. Suggs estimated the savings from laying off a small number of non-union museum employees would be less than $400,000 annually. Minuscule compared with the state's multi-billion-dollar deficit or the tax revenue generated by the tourists, he said. The museum's branch locations are the Dixon Mounds Archaeological Site in Lewiston and art galleries in Chicago, Lockport, and Winnington. End of article. Last article for part one for September 30th, Herald and Review, is Budget Deadlock Drags into Second Quarter, No End in Sight. This is by Kurt Arison, the Springfield Bureau Chief for the Herald and Review. Springfield, if there ever was any momentum to get a state budget in place, it is evaporated heading into the second quarter of the state's financial year. The state's fiscal year. After meeting nearly once a week during the early months of the stalemate, the Illinois House schedule has gone from predictable to sporadic, with no session scheduled now until October 20th, followed by another one on November 10th. The Senate, which has met less regularly than the House since the budget crisis began to escalate in June, is following a similar schedule. Also, for what could be the first time in modern state history, there'll be no fall veto session this year, primarily because the House and Senate have already taken up many of the governor's vetoes during the summer. The lack of inertia to get a budget in place after 3 months of gridlock has some lawmakers itching to jumpstart talks. I think we need an outcry from the rank and file lawmakers to the leaders to sit down and figure this out, said Representative Sue Scheer, a Decatur Democrat, on Tuesday. A Republican counterpart agreed. As we move into fall, I think you'll see some rank-and-file members calling for increased levels of discussion, said State Representative Dan Brady of Bloomington. There are pressure points everywhere, from child care services to higher education. Brady, the ranking Republican on the House committee overseeing the budget for higher education, said the lack of spending plan for the state universities is taking a toll. Southern Illinois University, for example, recently announced a series of program cuts designed to ensure the institution can continue operating into the new year. Eastern saved about $10 million through a series of cost-cutting measures enacted in the summer, including employee furloughs, attrition, and reductions in programs. We know we cannot go on like this, Brady said. That is the we're stopping in this article. Come back to it after the death notices in Part 2, but this is the end of Part 1, September 30th, Decatur Herald and Review. This is Debbie saying talk to you again soon.